Good afternoon. Welcome to Technical Deficit, where we solve technical challenges with Ray and friends. Today is very much going to be the "and friends" of that line, I guess, because I'm Phil Buck, your host for today, and I'm also the host of the MMN show, AI Roundup. And joining me is Creative Director of MMN, Matthew Fox. How's it going, Matthew?
Hey, Phil, I'm doing well. How are you doing today?
I'm not going to lie. I just got in from Memphis and my arms are so tired. No, sorry.
No, that's fine. That was a good joke. I was going to make a terrible one saying I thought you were still trapped inside the internet because I haven't seen you in a few days and the background's moving behind you. I don't know what's going on there.
Yeah.
You need a green screen like mine.
Well, it's appropriate that that's behind us because I made that with Stable Diffusion, an extension called DeForum, and that is the subject of today's show. We're going to get you started with Stable Diffusion. How do you feel about that?
I'm excited. Generative AI is something that I've been very much following more than working with because you've been working with it for so long now. I can't think of a time when you were not posting images to someplace that you were using generative AI to create. Gosh, I could look back maybe a year and a half, I'd say, that you've been
at least. I mean, feels like less than that. But I do remember when DALL-E 2 came out. And shout out if you guys haven't checked out the new episode of AI Roundup today. My other show that I mentioned, we did a short brief history of how generative AI became such like a household name. And for me, I like said this in the show, DALL-E 2 is where it hit. And I was making anthropomorphic food, 3D renders of hot dogs, corn dogs, pizza slices, sushi.
But I'm going to throw out one that I will never forget because it made me laugh so hard that I slipped off the chair in my other office and hit my head on my desk. Gus Fring as Slimer from Ghostbusters.
Oh, wow. Yeah,
that was a good one.
Yes, that was. I don't remember where that came from. I feel like that might have been a Midjourney one. Midjourney is very good for making those movie spinoffs, the 80s version of some movie. But I mean, speaking of DALL-E, speaking of Midjourney, these are great generative AI tools. Another one that I'm a big fan of is Stable Diffusion. And I'm sure people are wondering, what is Stable Diffusion? If you don't know, it's one of the deep learning text-to-image models. It came out last year. And I think one of the big differences of Stable Diffusion from DALL-E and Midjourney is that it's open source, right? You can manipulate it. You can do stuff with it that Midjourney and DALL-E say, no, it's off limits. You just can't, you know, they ban certain words. They don't let you get in there and operate on how the code works. But Stable Diffusion, because it is, you know, open source, there is a thriving community behind it. Which is really, you know, what I wanted to touch on, because I'm sure people are saying, well, you know, why can't you just go jump on Discord and use Midjourney? Why am I going to go through all the trouble of trying to get Stable Diffusion installed? And, you know, is my computer strong enough, et cetera, et cetera?
Well, we don't answer those questions until we try. And I think that's exactly what we're going to do today. So let's take a minute to suspend all fear of computing and what would happen if we make a mistake if something goes wrong, because I think that's a very big part of this. After all, this is called technical deficit. So let's roll up our sleeves. Actually, they're pre-rolled sleeves. You might want to get yours going and let's jump into this. Okay. Show me what's going on here.
So how do we do it? I do want to make a really clear distinction that if you're going to do this, you can run it on your own local system. If you're going to need to do a little research, if you have the hardware that's powerful enough to run it, you're going to have a good GPU. Not only that, it's going to be different for every system. For me, it was pretty difficult because I'm running on a Mac. Most of this stuff, you know, was engineered for NVIDIA cards, and that's not supported on the silicon chips, the architecture and all that. But that is the point behind that, I guess I'm saying, is that I'm not going to walk you through how to install this on your local system because there's a ton of different ways that it could go down. But I am including a ton of resources in the show notes. So if you want to do this on your local system, there's some great tutorials, both written and video, that you can see on how to do it locally. We want to get you started. So the way we're going to do this today is with Google Colab Notebooks. And the reason I choose to do it this way, or at least to do this tutorial this way, is because almost anybody's going to be able to, this is accessible to almost anybody, is what I'm trying to say. So if you have an iPhone, if that's your only device that you can get on the internet with, you can run Stable Diffusion from the iPhone, from your iPad, just using Google Colab. So let's just jump right in. Let's just rip off the Band-Aid, because I know I was super scared. And the way that it got me to actually install it locally was playing with it on a Google Colab notebook. I saw that, hey, this is not a big deal. This is really not that hard. And Let's go ahead and get my screen shared up here. I'm kind of laughing because when you see how easy this is, you're going to feel you're going to feel the same way I do. Because honestly, the big difference between Stable Diffusion and there's an additional web UI you can use called Automatic 1111 is night and day. So if you're using Stable Diffusion, you install it, you're running it command line, and you're typing the prompts of what you want to see, and then you get the images somewhere on your computer. It works great, but it's a little clunky. A better way to do this is to just Google Fast Stable Diffusion Automatic 1111. So this will not only install Stable Diffusion for you in a Google Colab notebook, it's also going to install that interface, the Automatic 1111. And what you're going to see, let's just pop over to it, is this beautiful interface. No more command line, no more having to memorize how all the different prompts work, the syntax, the order, the typos. It doesn't matter. This thing, you can type in something with an error, and it's still going to mostly understand what you were going for. So I would recommend people just do that. Do exactly what I said. Google Fast Stable Diffusion Automatic 1111, and what's going to come up is this guy right here, the actual notebook. It's all there for you. It's ready to go. And I'm going to walk you through this. I'm going to show you how all these things work, but we're going to use the magic of television. We're not going to make you wait while the cake is baking in the oven. We'll fast forward a little bit and show you how it works in action. But the first step, the very first step, is you're going to have a Google Drive account. So that way, not only it's going to have somewhere to download all the files that Stable Diffusion uses, it's also going to store your images. You're going to have a specific folder for outputs. But you'll connect your Google Drive right here. The reason I'm not going to do all these in real time is each one of them takes several minutes. So be patient if you're doing this. Let it run. You'll connect Google Drive. It'll say connected. It'll give you a nice little, in fact, let's click over here just so you can see the finished product. See these little green boxes? Very satisfying.
Green boxes are always nice. And I hope that those green boxes lead us to more great generated images like that koala on National Grilled Cheese Day that we had on the screen just a couple moments ago. I mean, that's the end product, the fun, rewarding part of this process. So what's next?
So then you're actually just going to install Automatic 1111 right here, the repository. It's going to do Stable Diffusion as well as that web UI. Fantastic. That'll take a few minutes. You'll go ahead and you will also run another box for requirements. This is basically just using Python to create the environment that Stable Diffusion is going to run in. Then you're going to need to download a model. We talked about this in the green room a little bit, but Stable Diffusion itself, sometimes they're referred to as checkpoints. That's actually what does the work, the heavy lifting, the model itself. And there's custom models out there that you can use as well. So
about how many models exist right now? Do we have a number on that?
Oh my God. Oh, I don't have a number, but I can guess it's thousands of models. People, to clarify what a model is, you know, Stability AI made the original Stable Diffusion 1.4 model. That's what everybody used when it came out. And then they upgraded it to 1.5, and the differences there are negligible. In fact, most people can't even really pinpoint the difference. Then more recently, Stability AI came out with 2.1, and that was an effort to censor it a little bit, to take out some of the stuff that they didn't feel like should be in there, not safe for work stuff, stealing artists' styles and stuff like that. And so you can download any of these models from Hugging Face when you decide to do it. In fact, it says right here, model version 1.5, you can drop down and go to 2.1, 2.1, 768 pixels. So a larger image size model. I typically stick to 1.5 because the internet has gone crazy fine tuning these models. And that's the point that I wanted to get to, is that people are training the base model on new data sets so that they can look like another artist, another movie, another, you name it, they've trained it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, like we were talking before, I kind of look at a model as being the analog to a human's point of view on something. We all start off differently. We learn, we have different experiences, and what we experience in life forms our opinions, our biases, our beliefs. And that's exactly what a model is. It's a set of those kinds of ideals. And they're very much going to be tied to any intent that went into their creation or anything that they stemmed from. So each one of these models is really almost like a different point of view on whatever it is we're asking it to do.
Exactly. And I would definitely recommend people playing around with different models. But I think for today, or at least for your first round, just use the base model, just play around, see how it works. I was going to say for today, we're just going to use the base model, but I have loaded up some other models for us to play with because I want y'all to see the difference. But at this point, you will download that model. It does take a while. It's a large file. It's several gigs. So give it some time to download. The next step is ControlNet. And as much as I would love to dive into this, it's yet another very beefy subject, kind of like that grilled cheese we saw. That I don't know that we'll be able to get into it a whole lot, but basically what ControlNet does is it gives additional information to the model so that it can interpret a pose. In fact, they have specific models for hands and faces, and you can use them together in conjunction with each other to get way more refined images. But that's kind of for another day. If you have the time, of course, go ahead and load them up. I mean, they're amazing tools to use with Stable Diffusion. Again, the models are fairly large, so give yourself some time when you load up ControlNet. And then the final step, the one that we've all been waiting for, start Stable Diffusion. That does take a little while as well, but you will see all the information about what's happening in this Google Colab notebook. You can think of this as a terminal, but just on the web, hosted by Google. And it's good. You always want to leave this window open. It's good to refer to this window sometimes to see what's happening behind the UI. But when it is ready, it'll pop up a little link for you to open up that automatic one-on-one web UI. And it's using Gradio, and that's how we get to this point with our koala.
You were mentioning the ControlNet earlier. Is that responsible for helping us generate images that have hands with five fingers and not 12 or 15 or 1,024?
That's exactly right. Yeah, ControlNet is, it's actually loaded on this one, so I can show you. There's a few different versions of it. And I don't want to go too crazy with this because we could spend the whole hour on this. But the way that it works is it uses a preprocessor. So what that means is it'll take an image that you want to use. Like if you wanted somebody to be standing in a pose, like hands on hips or something, it'll take that image and it'll use one of these preprocessors to make an outline of them, make a depth map of them, make a colored stick figure, and it's colored to indicate the different body parts. And then once it's preprocessed, it'll give you a new image. And it'll feed that image with the processed information into what you're going to generate. So, for instance, if we had a man with making a flexed fist, you could feed that in. And then hopefully when we generate this koala eating a grilled cheese, he would be flexing as well. But if you don't mind, I would love to at this point. This is the part that always gets me excited. Just jump right into how Automatic 1111 works and what you can do with it.
This is what I've been waiting for. I wanted to get past all the technical jargon to see exactly what it is that we're going to create. This is the exciting part. This is the part that makes all of the preparation worth it. So let's jump in.
All right. So what you're going to see at the very top of the screen is this little drop-down window. It's now processing because this is Stable Diffusion Checkpoint. Models, like we said, we're going to just use the base model for now. It's called model.ckpt. That stands for checkpoint. And if you decide to download models, this is where you would find them. As you can see in this drop-down menu, you got a couple of them. I do want to play with them later, but I want to demonstrate what it looks like when you're just working with the base model. And as a little caveat, when you do this Google Colab notebook, it is updated from the GitHub from the guy that made this, The Last Bin. Shout out to The Last Bin. So it changes almost daily sometimes. Like, for instance, I'll be honest, this SDVAE, that's new to me. I've never had this on mine. Clip Skip as well is also one that I have yet to really use. So I can't give you guys a huge explanation on that because I haven't had the time to play with it.
And that's okay. But I think it's also a great example of the type of speed at which these advancements and improvements occur, and that a lot of it that's coming from it being open source software and there being a community of people that are contributing and giving their opinions and their feedback. So I think that just as it's exciting to generate an image, it's going to be exciting to pop in here and see new features every time you go in. It's just more outlets for creativity. And
I appreciate you saying that, because that's really what gets me. That's why I wanted to do this, is I'm hoping that we can get some other people excited about this stuff and that they will start doing it and talking to me about it in our Discord.
Absolutely. In fact, you know what? I'm going to go so far as to pull the creative director rank and say the next episode of MSP Dispatch that we record is going to only use thumbnails from AI generated models. Let's see what happens. Saying it right here live. We're committed. Absolutely committed to it. Boom.
But yes, please get in there, because I think one of the reasons I decided to start AI Roundup is because once I started playing with Stable Diffusion, I was constantly reading articles and updates and new extensions. And that only led me deeper into the world of AI, generative AI stuff. Like, I didn't know a ton about ChatGPT, but I do now because I was so interested just by way of having fun with Stable Diffusion. And it's kind of like video games for me at this point. Like, I don't play video games half the time. I just see what I can generate.
All right. Well, let's not try to use any cheat codes or game genies today. Let's just dive in and see what we can do with what we got.
All right. Well, we've got a prompt that we use for today. It's National Grilled Cheese Day, if I remember correctly. Thank you, Simon, our producer, for giving this idea, a koala eating a grilled cheese. And you can just type your prompt right here. I want to give some tips about prompting. You can give it more inspiration, more ideas by separating them with a comma. So let's say art by Picasso. And let's say, just to demonstrate here, the negative prompt box, say you don't want something in your image. This is another thing that's so powerful about Stable Diffusion, is it gives you control over a lot of things you don't get in these other images. So now, you had said,
Yes, I was going to say, if you wanted to grill cheese, hold the fries. This is where the fries get placed.
Thank you. Exactly. Okay. I think you would ask if the koala was eating bacon on there.
I did.
I'm going to ask him to say no bacon on this grilled cheese.
Hold the bacon.
He's a vegetarian koala. And then I want to, before we generate this image, I do want to take the opportunity to share a few other features. And this is where you start to go down the rabbit hole. So cut me off, or I'll cut myself off.
I'm going to pull you right back up. Don't worry. Go for it.
There are like dozens of different samplers that you can use. They all have their advantages and disadvantages. I tend to use Euler A, because it's fast, but I have heard a lot of people use DPM++ 2S Acaris. I'm sorry, I can't explain to you all the names of these and where they come from.
How about what exactly is sampling with respect to what we're talking about right now?
It is the method by which the image is going to, you know, remove that noise. So we always kind of start from a seeded blank noise plane, and there's different ways the samplers interpret that noise to end up at your final image. Some of them work faster. Some of them, people say, I mean, this is subjective, but some people say they have higher quality, but they take longer. And that's the subject that you could literally go spend a whole day on, just looking at comparisons of how these images look and how they work. And it gets really technical. And that's why I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole today.
It's very technical. And I always try to find some type of analogy to put things like this against. And I think it's almost like having a memory that's a little bit fuzzy. And the more you think about it, the more clear it becomes, until you fully remember exactly what it is. And you've got that perfect image in your head.
I think that's fair. Yes. Especially using the noise, you know, as the dream here, I would say,
Absolutely.
But you'll notice right next to sampling method, you have sampling steps. And this is a big one. You can tell Stable Diffusion how many steps you want to be in between the blank noise and your finished image. And this is a big deal. Euler A is kind of fun because even at very low steps, I've done as low as like 12 sometimes, you get pretty good images. Most people say you don't really want to go above 75. At that point, you're kind of wasting time and effort.
Yeah.
But other samplers, it works differently. Some people go to 75 and above because they start to get more interesting at that point. We're going to stick with Euler A. We're going to stick with 20. That's a nice happy medium.
It was 20 what we used to generate this image with the koala? Because if that's the case, that image is just fun.
Yeah, this is the steps that we used. I think we used a different... We use a different checkpoint, so we'll come back to that later. But let's just go ahead and see what happens. And for the fun of it, you have how many images you create per batch. So let's take it up to 4. That way we get a nice grid. And we're plenty deep in this episode. It's time to get some images on the screen. Let's see what happens.
Some images on the screen. And also, our producer Simon is going to be posting some of these images into the MMN Discord as they're generated. So if you're in there and you want to give some feedback and have a little fun, please do so. We'll be with you guys there shortly.
So this one, I do want to note that I did say art by Picasso, and it did deliver. Give it a second to refresh the UI with the images. Here we go. And wow, look. I mean, very Picasso-esque. I don't see any bacon. Do you?
I don't see bacon. I see some delicious grill marks, and I see a lot of satisfied koalas. That's what I see right now.
Yes. So I would say overall a success. I mean, even with the base model. Let's take out art by Picasso this time. Let's try something like photorealistic, and let's also try, I'll show you guys another trick here. let's say eating a grilled cheese with a side of fries. And now you can weight your prompts. So if you want a prompt to have something emphasized, there's a couple ways you can do this. You can put a certain word in parentheses. So we'll do fries in parentheses. You can add more parentheses if you want that to have more emphasis. Or on top of that, you can use this syntax of saying fries and then colon and then 1 point something. So one would be the base value. Say 1.3, well, then it's weighting it quite a bit above.
Higher.
So let's see what happens. Can we get a photorealistic koala eating a grilled cheese?
Oh, so loves-
it really took the weight of the prompt.
I think just seeing the surprise of what we got here is great and is a little bit of laughter, but I could just, I'm jealous of the koala right now. I'm just going to say it. I'm jealous.
Yeah. Yeah. I think for lunch today, I'm going to have to hit the local bar food and get some steak fries. Look at that guy, man. Wow. So let's dive into some other options that you can use. I showed you guys how you can increase the batch count. I think it's a good idea because honestly, when you're generating AI images, it's a little bit of a roll of the dice. It's a crapshoot, right? Like artists get up in arms about how bad some of this stuff works. And I kind of agree with them because people that get really good stuff, they usually roll 10, 12 images to find the best one. You know, that's not typically how we approach art, but I don't personally have a problem with it. I think that's kind of the fun of it.
I think that's honestly a hallmark of graphic design. Remember, and I say this not to start a debate, but graphic design solves problems, art causes it. And I said that really quickly to slide it in there. But realistically, if you're doing design work for the point of accomplishing a task, you're going to want to have multiple iterations and choices to make sure you're going in the right direction. So I see this as being perfectly fine for most applications.
Let's take out the side of fries this time. That was a bit much, but let's see if we can.
I'm also going to give the quick disclaimer that both of my parents are artists. One's a fashion designer, the other's a sculptor. So I did. I grew up in that environment, and I can say that very, very confidently.
So next up, I'm going to show you a few more options. You can change the size of the image, and I think it's really, really, really worth noting that the data sets that these models were trained on were all images that are 512 by 512. So that means the best results are typically images that are 512 by 512. Now, you can definitely stretch those limits. And in this case, I want to take this up a bit. And I'm going to go to the width on this 768. That's a typical aspect ratio you see with these images. Not necessarily in anything else, but works really well for these images. As you start to go wider and wider, you'll start to see really weird things happening, like duplicates.
Like this is like, what, 3:2 aspect ratio? Yes,
basically. And another thing to note is that you have to do your images in factors of 4. If you go to something that's not, if it's like an odd number, your image will get squished. It'll look like you opened Photoshop and didn't maintain aspect ratio and just squished it. So of course you can do that, but I think it's good to know. I wouldn't personally do that. And then the other thing I want to show is the CFG scale, which CFG is the controlling of how strongly you want to enforce the AI to listen to your prompt. The lower it is, the more room for creativity, quote unquote, you give Stable Diffusion. The higher it is,
the more literal you want them to take your prompt. Okay, interesting.
And just for sake of experiment, I'm going to take this up to about a 12. You know, so far we haven't really hit a problem, which is maybe what we need. We need a problem to happen so that we can demonstrate this a little better. But you know what? Let's create a problem. Let's crank this baby all the way up to like 30, and you'll see what happens. This will be fun because if you tell the computer something too strong, you'll see what happens. The results are less than desirable. Let's see what happens.
Let's see. I'm really curious to see how much time this takes versus the 512 by 512 image, because I have a feeling that a lot of people are going to watch this and they're going to have ideas for posts on social media, maybe marketing related posts for their jobs. And a lot of us would use, say, 1080 by 1080 or larger for like a 1-to-1 ratio social post. So I'd love to get a sense of, oh boy, look at that, how long it would take. Oh, that looks like an old a Cartoon Network or Comedy Central cartoon, the one with the demons and stuff. There was a koala in it that was like an accountant or something. That looked very much like it.
All right, that didn't take too long, even upsizing it a little bit. I mean, 4 images in what was that, maybe 20-30 seconds?
Not even.
And let's take a look at our grid. These are fascinating. I don't know what I'm looking at right now.
All right, so let's just take a quick look and see if we could describe those really quickly, because those are Is that
this looks like cardboard, like South Park?
Yes, it looks like a very, very early South Park crossed with another either Comedy Central or Cartoon Network show, and they're eating a Pop-Tart. I don't know if you noticed that. That was a Pop-Tart. That was not a grilled cheese. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, I don't know what this is. I don't know how to describe this at all. And this is probably a result of cranking up that CFG really, really high. Mm-hmm. It was probably just trying its very, very best to put a koala and a SpongeBob into one image and just poop the bed, as we say.
It didn't work. This is Jeff Goldblum, the fly level wrong. How about we try lowering that CFG and re-rendering and see what happens?
I think that's a great idea. Great experiment. We'll take this down to, let's go back to, I was going to go back to 7, but let's keep it at 9 for now and then generate again.
Just because you can turn it all the way up does not mean you should.
No, we're not going to turn it up to 11. This isn't Spinal Tap. Hey, look, that's not bad. I mean, it's not good.
Did SpongeBob become the grilled cheese there?
I think so. This is killing me. So while these are generating, I want to point out another cool feature. If you notice here below CFG scale, you have seed, right? We talked about that a little bit with the samplers. It starts with a noise bed based on a random seed. And that's because it's set up to be random. It's -1 is interpreted as random for our purposes here. And if you find an image that you like, so you'll notice if I scroll down a little bit, we have all this information about the image that was just generated. And one of the bits of information is the seed. Mm-hmm. So if you really enjoyed this image, you could try to generate it again with the same seed, but alter a few of the details, change the CFG, change the steps, alter the prompt. And in fact, why not? I mean, is there any of these images that you really like, Matt?
The image that was already up with the two koalas that look super excited remind me of the meme of the guys that had the impossible KFC or whatever it was.
Kind of reminds me of those Quiznos commercials from
the Sponge Monkeys,
the teeth and everything.
Yes let's what can we do with this?
Well, let's go ahead and so you'll notice a little recycle button here, and that's because mm-hmm. it's going to recycle that seed from this image for you. See, it popped in right there, very nice. And just to change a few things, maybe let's turn up the sampling steps to 25. And let's take out photorealistic this time, just to make it a very simple A-B test, right? And we'll generate, probably shouldn't have generated 4 images. What will happen?
Because I actually have a quick question for you after this, being that we did mention Quiznos, and they really did have a great campaign about 20 years ago. And we keep using the style of particular artists, like you use Picasso. Is it possible to ask this to be done in the style of a Quiznos commercial? Or is that asking for too much?
That's a fantastic question. I mean, presuming that the data contains something about Quiznos, I would say the answer is yes. And very nice opportunity. We're running into a technical challenge right now. As I'm trying to generate this image, something is going wrong. The UI is locked up. So it's a good time to point out that you always have your terminal running here in the background. You can check the details of what is happening. Looks like nothing is going wrong. So in this case, I think it's totally safe. We'll just refresh our web UI browser.
Okay.
And then we can copy paste kind of where we were. Let's see. A koala and SpongeBob eating a grilled cheese in the style of a Quiznos commercial. Is that what we're going for?
Yeah. Why not? Let's see what happens. We're just going off the rails. We're going to figure out how this works. I want to see what happens.
So we lost our seed, unfortunately. So we'll try that again with this test and see what we can do. But yeah, I'm very curious to see. I mean, there's just not a lot for it to go off of for Quiznos, I don't think.
It wasn't the greatest choice, but it was a calculated risk.
Well, this will give us a new opportunity to recycle our seed.
Okay.
We'll throw this image in. So now we know that with this noise seed bank, whatever you want to call it, noise bank, we've got a koala head peeking over maybe a wall or something, and a grilled cheese is hanging out. Let's take out the style of Quiznos here, and let's throw back in our photorealistic descriptor and see what happens. Just testing the waters here. Just want to see the difference.
Now, we use terms to describe the style of the image. Can we use terms to describe the medium? Let's say we were using charcoal or crepas or watercolor or something like that.
So notice the composition of the image is very similar. Same blue wall, not really a wall in this one. It almost looks like a, could be someone's butt that a grilled cheese is resting on.
I just was thinking it looks like an amazing kind of like, I don't know, grilled cheese truck in Australia kind of ad. Could see it on the side of a food truck. I don't know about you, but that's what I'm thinking here. Just, I'm getting hungry as we go on with this.
Let's try, as you just suggested, some other styles. So I'm going to try technical drawing, and then I'm going to take our width back up to 768. See how much of that composition remains the same now that has a bigger canvas to work on.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Really, really different.
I don't see the technical drawing aspect, but I do almost see two koalas rack mounting equipment. So that's technical enough for me.
Yeah. Let's try, you said charcoal. Let's try charcoal drawing. I bet we'll lose all color. And I wonder how the composition will remain the same, because with the sizing change, it makes sense. The composition didn't really hang in there, but that's okay. Mm-hmm. I think it will this time.
I want to see different tone. Oh, look at that.
Interesting.
Is it charcoal? No, not really. But I could see someone using the...
Mostly. No.
Well, the shading of it, the textures there, it looks like it was on some paper with some grain. That was actually kind of cool looking.
All right, let's try one more before we dive back into some of the features of Automatic 1111. I'm going to try psychedelic. I just really want to see where this takes us.
Very black lighty kind of looking thing, hopefully.
What? Come on. I think we got some bacon in there.
What is it with bacon? Everyone, all right, no, everyone, pretty much everyone loves bacon. That's fine. I get it. That's probably a bias built into almost all AI models at this point anyway.
Right. But
there is some serious partying going on there. You know, I wouldn't say psychedelic, but that character looks psyched to have that grilled cheese. And honestly, if I had a grilled cheese that was twice my height, I'd be pretty psyched.
Yeah, it's got like a little heart just floating up there to signify the deep passion for this grilled cheese the koala is going
to
have.
It's something, you know, even though this is coming from a machine, I think that's a very human emotion to have. Yes, like it.
Agreed. So I do want to point out, everything that we've done up to this point, we've been playing with just the very first tab in Automatic 1111. Which is text to image. That's what most people think of when they think of these AI art generating tools. Now, a workflow I've seen a lot of people using is they like to generate a bunch of images, and then they take that image and they use some of these buttons down here to do lots of fun and useful things. You can open the location of the file. You can save it manually to a place you might want to. I don't know really why you would want to zip it. Maybe if you did like 100 images. But then the fun ones happen. Send to image. So say you find a composition that you really like and you're like, it's not quite right, but this is the right idea. I'd go ahead and say, smash that send to image button. What's going to happen is it's going to take that image that you've already made. It's going to send it to this panel where image can be interpreted as another image. And you still have the ability to type a prompt. You can still add new aspects to the image, but it's going to pull on this image that you've already got. So it doesn't have to be one you've generated with Stable Diffusion. I mean, you could pull an image of yourself. You could pull an image off the web, plug it in, and you can get a lot of different results. Sorry.
Unexpected results. I love it. I love how unexpected what you end up with is here. And just to be clear, we have already replaced Phil with an AI model that was established at the beginning of the show when our leader, Ray Orsini, asked if these were the real Phil and Matt. And I am very, very proud to say that no, we have been tricking you for the last 90 days. And this was just the punchline.
No, actually, Matt is an AI. I chose to go the multiplicity route, like Michael Keaton. I just got clones of me. Comes in way more handy. The AI still, I can't trust my kids with the AI, you know.
Well, I'm happy to hear that you're continuing down the Michael Keaton path. I thought that you turning into a snowman last year was a little odd, but the multiplicity side, I love it.
It works, right? Some of them can't brush their teeth quite right, but you know, they're doing their best. But let's get back to image. In the last image we generated, I did say psychedelic, right? We didn't quite get that. So this is an opportunity. You could send that image to the next tab, image to image, and you could say just a simple prompt, psychedelic art, right? So now it's going to have to pull on that image and my prompt at the same time. Now there's some important features to this that you may want to look at as you scroll down. There is denoising strength. This is the big one right here. That tells Stable Diffusion, how much do I want to...
It's about retaining the original image.
Thank you. You nailed it. Yeah. Yes. So if you use a high denoising strength, you probably would get something totally different. because it's going to inject a lot of noise to this image and then try to bring it back to something recognizable. If you turn it way, 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 way down, you won't get anything at all. It would just get the same image again.
So let's say that you had an image that was generated and you were really happy with it, but it needed a bit of fine tuning. There was just something that was a little bit off. We would turn the denoising strength down, render, and then adjust as needed?
Possibly. And I'm glad you asked that because that's a perfect segue into the next tab. And before we jump into that, I do just want to share the results of what it looks like to use image to image. So let's do psychedelic art. Let's use our strange koala eating this grilled cheese on top of bacon, I think is what we're seeing here.
And I've got no problem with that. I would eat it too.
Let's see what happens though. Let's just see what we get. Probably will take a moment here to get it going. But to answer your question, what you can do is you can use yet another feature called inpainting. And inpainting is going to let you fine tune an image. Here it comes. Oh, wow.
Hold on a second. That's album cover art right there. That's amazing. From where it came from, the koala to that?
Well, the denoising strength was relatively high. So if you were not happy with these results, like I can definitely see, you know, our heart became the magenta.
There are elements here. I mean, this, goodness, it looks like, what is it, Zool from Ghostbusters or whoever it was, the gatekeeper, out of a grilled cheese sandwich. That's amazing.
And then, I'd say, I don't know, the table became kind of like a mesa or something.
It's a plane of some sort. This is very, very psychedelic. This is too much.
This is fun. Let's play with this. Yeah. So the next thing you can do is you still have the same buttons down below. We could send this one to image if you wanted to reinterpret it. But you ask about fine tuning, right? Mm-hmm. So what you'd want to do in this case is use the next button, send to inpaint. And so what inpainting does is it lets you use your cursor to draw a mask on certain parts of the image and then use a prompt to fill in those masked areas. So a lot of times when people are generating images of somebody and getting bad hands, they'll take their favorite one, they'll send it to inpainting, they'll mask out the hands, and then they'll just prompt hands and they'll roll a bunch of them because AI is not very good with the hands, as we know. But now, we did touch on ControlNet, and I do want to say, maybe for another episode, we can come back to this. People are now using ControlNet to inpaint or to create image-to-image examples where they use a depth map of hands and re-roll the image again and get really good hands. And it's crazy. I mean, it's not as good as Midjourney, but it makes me wonder if Midjourney has somehow programmatically, you know, somehow automated that process, right? Like,
oh, it just becomes a part of the regular workflow that's executed when you want an image to be generated. And that makes perfect sense because I think that was one of the, not only a flaw, I guess, with AI, if you want to call it a flaw, it's, I mean, everything's still so early that I almost am hesitant to call it a flaw. Are you going to put a mustache on that person in honor of me?
No, I'm
okay, good.
you'll see.
Yeah. Okay. But I think it makes sense because the number of fingers on a hand is the one thing I've seen criticized and roasted, absolutely roasted when it comes to AI. Why not tackle that problem in the background before it becomes something that people are going to either criticize or not want to use your product because it's there? So that makes perfect sense.
Yeah, I give a lot of credit to Midjourney because I feel like they are tackling those problems. Like, they don't talk about it, so I can only offer conjecture, but it does seem like they see the issue and they're finding ways to build it into the workflow that is, hands off.
Iterative improvements that are taking place in the background so that we can spend more time being creative and less time figuring out how something works. That's it. Oh, and of course, it is National Licorice Day, so thank you. Red Licorice.
There we go. You picked up on what I was laying down. I'm going to see if we can get some red licorice lips here. So far, no dice. I mean,
Phil, I got to ask you a question, just a regional thing. When you refer to red licorice, are you a Twizzler person or a Red Vine person? I feel like you're a Red Vine kind of guy.
That sounds about right, because you're from up in the New England area. I'm a Twizzler person, and I'm a Twizzler pull and peel person, to be honest.
Okay, let's get back to AI.
So far, I've noticed I've made a mistake. So when you're doing inpainting, there are so many options. You can do a little blur on your mask. You can choose different mask modes. You also need to choose what the inpainting area would be. And in this situation, we've run into another technical challenge where I forgot to change the mode. The inpainting area should be only masked. If you did the whole image, I'm not going to quite get the desired results. So let's try this again. We may have just a simple technical error in that the web UI is acting up today. So that is another reason that I would say, if you're enjoying this, if you're playing with a Colab notebook and running into little hangups, when you do this on your own local system, I'm not going to say it's not going to be without its own technical challenges. Of course, you're going to run into issues. I've crashed it many times, but I don't usually have the web UI hang up like this. And oh, let's see. Yeah, it looks like we did have an error. I'm just switching over to the terminal.
Okay.
Something happened. Trace back most recent last call. This is a technical challenge that I will not be able to solve on this show, but that's okay. Let's kind of do like a blanket reset, because I did want to touch on something we haven't touched on at all yet, which is custom models. People are, like we talked about, fine tuning these models, and this will be a great chance to just refresh and pull in a new model and see kind of how different the results will be.
A refresh sounds good. I think technical issues are something that are sometimes a frustration, but in this situation feels like it's just a reason to go in another route and discover new things. And I think that's great. And I'm just going to take a moment to tell the audience that they have to check you out, an AI Roundup.
Oh,
your own
you.
Show here on the MSP Media Network, where they can not just learn more about AI, but really dig into the history of it. You know, the episode that you put out today talking about the history of, I think it was OpenAI that you covered, if I'm correct.
I was just trying to boil down how we got to the like last 9 months, and it's definitely OpenAI. It's definitely Midjourney. It's definitely Stable Diffusion, but like, it feels like we've hit a fever pitch of AI stuff. I just thought it'd be good to just kind of zoom out and see how we got to this point in time.
I think it's fantastic. I encourage everyone watching to check out episode 6 of AI Roundup to learn more. And I'm just going to say one last thing about it. Your timeline starts in the 1950s. And That's a bit shocking, and the reason to watch his episode. So please, everyone, check it out. Also, like, share, and subscribe.
There you go. Thank you. I appreciate that a lot. It's easier sometimes when other folks tell them to like and subscribe than myself.
Absolutely.
So we're gonna backtrack here. We're going to go all the way back to our koala eating a grilled cheese. I wanted to try to get some licorice in here.
I think that AI has a little trouble discerning a BLT and a grilled cheese with licorice.
Because
I'm getting BLT vibes.
Let's just see if we can have a koala eating licorice.
That sounds
hopefully
good.
It can nail it this time. I did want to point out that I changed the model on this one. This is a model called Protogen. It has several different models, so I think this is 3.4. But you definitely will see drastically different results with different models, even without prompting, you know, a crazy amount of descriptors. That's one of the things that's very different about Stable Diffusion from Midjourney is, at least on version 4 of Midjourney, you would just go type a concept, right? And it would go to town. I think there probably was something behind the surface that added more information to the prompts, you know, like stylizing it and framing it and compositionalizing.
Training wheels, if you will, to keep you going forward. Absolutely.
Stable Diffusion really likes the descriptors. So like, for instance, adding stuff like photorealistic, masterpiece. What's another good one, Matt? Anything come to mind?
Stunning,
yes. And then let's say, I want to add a little more. The licorice did not work at all, for the record. This is just a tree branch.
Well, licorice is a type of root. So let's put licorice candy.
All right, let's go back to our grilled cheese. Let's add in some new qualifiers. Oh, you know what? Let's have him wearing some armor.
Ooh, like a medieval koala enjoying a grilled cheese meal after a victory. I love it.
Exactly. And then once we get this image, I want to send it back to InPaint and see if we can just demo what InPainting is like, because I feel like it's a really valuable tool. And since we didn't get any armor in this image, maybe that's what we can use InPainting for.
Okay.
There we go. He's really having a good time with that grilled cheese. Okay, let's try to send it over to InPaint. And if we're lucky at all, maybe we can get some like shoulder pads on him. There's not a lot of his body. Maybe we could go for a helmet.
Koala with a cod piece and a grilled cheese. I just don't know how I feel about that.
It's going to take a little time to load that image up. Let's bear with it here while it looks. And I do want to tell you guys, there's so many more features to this that we're definitely not going to be able to get to all of them. Some things that I really wanted to talk about, but obviously we got to kind of focus on the meat and potatoes of just getting started with Stable Diffusion. I think some things I would encourage people to try out if you load this up in a Google Collab is check out the extensions tab. If you go over to extensions, we'll come back to this, see if it loads up, and you go under available. There's a little tab below that, it will already have the GitHub address for all the official extensions that you can add. And if you just click that, here we go, it'll load up an enormous list. I mean, this is like this is kitting out your automatic 1111. This is like if you were the person that got a car and put a spoiler on it and changed the tires. And
this is the exhibit version of 1111.
Yes.
Yo dog, I heard you like AI.
So we put some AI in your AI. But I do want to just touch on a few that are extremely useful. Some of them are just practical. There's a tool for the aspect ratio helper.
Mm-hmm.
If you add this in, you'll just have buttons so that you can do 1:1, 16:9, that kind of stuff. One that I really, really love, and you've seen the videos if you've watched AI Roundup, it's called Deforum. It is a tool for taking your prompts, generating images, and then turning those images into animation. So what's happening right here behind me? Basically, it starts with one static image and it changes the orientation. It tells it to zoom in or zoom out a little bit, and then it generates yet another image based on that new cropping, if you will. And it continues that process over thousands of frames if you want to.
I want to point out that not only is that a fantastic plugin, but I know it's one that has occupied a lot of your time. I remember there was an evening, I think it was like 1:30 in the morning, and you and I were going back and forth on possible intros for AI Roundup all coming from this. And the level of excitement between both of us kept us up for quite some time. And I think that's just a great example of not only how this can really pull you in and get you going, but how it enables us to do work. The intros to AI Roundup are engaging and fun to watch, and they're varied. They're different every episode, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, I don't make new ones every episode yet because I made a huge stockpile of, I was just testing the water, seeing what I could do. And I think I probably made like a dozen of them. So we kind of alternate them, rotate them in and out.
And that's fun, but let's just take one moment to think about how much time would go into actually composing something like that in a piece of software like we would use on a daily basis. The time savings, plus the range of creativity that's in it, that's not just coming from you or myself or anyone else from the team, but being assisted through this AI technology. And I think that it's such a shining example of what can be done. These days, a lot of us, especially in the channel and the industry that we work on in, are very much about text-based generation and coming up with, you know, lists and ways to truncate information to make it easily digestible for ourselves, our customers, whoever it is. This is completely different. This is all about creativity, and I'm having a great time with it. And I just kind of wanted to get that out there. Although I am going to ask you before we conclude, and I know we still have some time, I would appreciate just one image that included a chicken nuggets instead of a grilled cheese, only because I think that it's safe to do. And I think that Ray would agree with me to say that the chicken nugget is MMN's official food.
Okay, let's try.
Flags and dishes, MMN's official food is the chicken nugget.
I agree. We're going to try to generate a creative director eating chicken nuggets. And let's frame this one to be more of a...
If it comes out, actually, can we make it square? So if it comes out, I will use it as my LinkedIn profile photo for a while.
And Ray does say, absolutely, it is the official food of MMN. Thank you, Ray. We needed the sign off on that. Oh my gosh. What is happening here? That is maybe that is a great point about creative directors, is that you are a child at heart. You still have the wonder of the world in your soul. And you love chicken nuggets. That makes sense. Why else? The
style by which the subject in the photo is eating the nuggets is very similar to my own. And I think that's spot on. I would not use it as a LinkedIn profile photo. It may come off a bit strange that way.
No, I don't think that's a good idea.
But the intent behind it's amazing.
Let's try an executive eating chicken nuggets. I think that the contrast in those two is a little funnier. So let's see what happens here. And oh, give me a break.
Oh, the executive's out doing something else. Got the assistant taking care of the nuggets. That's all that is.
Yeah. Let's maybe executive is too vague. Let's try. Oh, and you notice I had a typo in there. It said an executive. Oh, never mind. That was correct. I was going to point out how I could still interpret your prompt even with the typo, but that was actually correct. Anyway, let's try a businessman eating chicken nuggets. Hopefully this will land what I want to see. I want to see that childlike wonder come out. Yes.
Hey, there we go.
Now we're talking.
In the back of my head, I was saying, I hope it looks like oh, what's the main character's name from American Psycho? Patrick Bateman or something like that.
Oh, wow. Can we do that? Let's try Christian Bale eating chicken nuggets. Christian Bale wearing a suit, eating chicken nuggets. Let's throw in a photorealistic there. Because I got to tell you guys, something that we didn't, I mean, we could do a whole deep dive on just prompts. I think people like to make fun of AI art creations because they call them, you know, oh, you're just a prompter or something. But like, I've seen some really impressive stuff go into making prompts. I mean, it's almost like a form of creative writing. And,
you know, Phil, I'm going to have
nothing like short stories that you would typically. Oh,
oh, my goodness.
What is going on here?
Is that called duck face? Is that what that type of pose or photo is?
It's like he's got Pringles or French fries in his mouth. I'm terrified.
It's pre-gaming. That's all that is.
I'm going to try to do in-painting one more time because we did not get to demonstrate this at all. Mm-hmm. So we're back on in-painting panel now. And since we do have a very strange mouth, we can try to see if we can fix it real quick. We'll switch this over to only mask. And let's just try Christian Bale first real quick, photorealistic, mm-hmm. and see if it can. Now, what may happen is we might end up with a tiny little Christian Bale in his mouth.
Well, then it'd be great. It'd be like Aliens. You know, the alien opens its mouth, the other mouth comes out, and it's Christian Bale.
I'm Batman.
How great would that be? Come on.
I'm both terrified and okay. Well, hey, not terrible, not great, but you see that it did interpret that little area, gave it like a mustache, yeah. I think.
Maybe.
But it fixed it. If you go back to our original image here, I mean, look, he has a very strange, hybrid of food and lips. Take it over to in-painting, and what do we have? Where did it go? Image to image.
I'm going to say that I don't really see Christian Bale. I think I see Zachary Quinto from like Heroes or the remake of Star Trek a little bit more than anything else here.
Fair. So there is one last feature because we are starting to get close to an hour here. We're going to have some homework, some cleaning up to do at the end of this episode. I want to mm-hmm. make sure I throw in a few really important features because you touched on this and I didn't get to it. You said as a graphic designer, typically you're using certain sizes, right? Like as a video editor, I'm always a go-to at 1920 by 1080 or what is 4K? 38. I should know that off the top of my head. Anyway, let's change the subject and show you another feature called Send to Extras. Now in Extras, there's a ton of stuff in here, but the most important one is you can upscale your images. So you don't have to be stuck at this 512 by 512 or whatever you chose. You can upscale it by default up to 4 times. It's using the AI to upscale it. So it's not just like when you open Photoshop and click and drag and make this image bigger. You know, it's interpreting it. It's adding more pixels. You know, it's adding more information. It takes a long time. So I'm going to go ahead and do it. And we may have to wait till the end of the episode to see it.
Oh, that's perfectly fine. We've got plenty to talk about in the meantime.
So I typically will use, there's a bunch of different, so these are like samplers, they're upscalers where they have different ways of upscaling the image. That's something that you would really need to spend some time looking into if you want to know more about it. It would be not fruitful to try to explain it here on this episode.
Would it be safe to say that nearest neighbor would be a good starting point? Because I find that maybe good in most other applications.
If you're looking for the most technical, like get to the result that I know what you're thinking. Like you're thinking like in Photoshop, right? Like you would do something like that.
Photoshop, and there is an application that I unfortunately can't remember the name of right now, and we'll add it in the show notes for upscaling video to twice the size that it currently is. And I believe that Nearest Neighbor is the preferred option for that piece of software. But
we're going to inject a little more creativity, not so much technical, but we're going to use Erskine 4X. It's just the one that I've used the most. I've gotten tips from other AI workflows. People are using this. And you can actually add in a second upscaler if you want. And people do this to get even more creative with how the final image works. Let's go ahead and get this generating. It does take a while. Let's jump over to our terminal and see if we can see. So what it will do is it'll take that image, it'll chop it up into tiles, and then it'll slowly upscale and start to put it back together. We run into another technical challenge. Let's see if we can figure out what happened. Hard to say by this error. Let me try it one more time.
Go for it.
Let's just switch to a different sampler to see if maybe that was something. We'll go to Nearest Neighbor this time. Let's see what happens. It's putting it in the queue. Let's jump over to our terminal. Hard to say. Oh, okay. So Nearest Neighbor did work. All right. And fast, too. So let's see. It's hard to say because my image is sized for the show. Like I probably could zoom in on this even more. Let's see if we can open it in a new tab and zoom in. Yeah, see, there we go. So you can see how this final image, like once you zoom in, might leave a little bit to be desired, but it is a much larger image than we started with. I mean,
it is. You know what's interesting about these images is the type of, of course, now that I have to say the word, I forget. I've completely blanked out on the term I'm looking for, Phil. When you have two different colors next to each other, there's a little bit of a gradient or a change. Diffusion. There's some diffusion going on.
Diffusion, you say? Huh.
Is it stable?
Hey, terrible jokes. I think
anti-aliasing was really what I was trying to get at there. Sorry.
Okay, I appreciate you. We are in the final 5 minutes of the episode. So before we wrap up, let's do a little bit of important homework. Let's see what's going on in the community events this week. Simon, would you mind jumping in on that for us? There he is. Is he on mute?
Simon's on mute.
Somebody hit him with the tech bar drinking words.
You know what, Simon? Phil has been away from the office for a couple days. Phil, why don't you take care of the event calendar for today?
Fair enough. I've been slacking. I wasn't here on Monday to do it. So coming up later this week, the Tech Bar Podcast, episode 56, featuring Travis Mayo, sorry, Travis, of Nano Geeks. So you don't get to edit it and, take out the little gas. That's not fair. In case you missed it, AI Roundup, episode 7, and then MSP Dispatch on Tuesdays and Fridays. I should point out that the Tech Bar is on Thursday. It's at 6:30 p.m.
Yes,
and
it's
a brand new episode this Thursday. It's going to be great. We're all stoked about it.
You know what? I'm going to just come out and say every episode is a brand new episode.
You got me there. You got me there. And Ray has got Simon in the comments. Mute, 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 mute.
Hold on. You know what? Being that this is an MMN show and we're just so used to these things. Hey, Simon. Bye. I haven't done that before. Just felt fun. Poor guy's laughing. We love
How
you, man.
Rude. I'm here for you, Simon. They don't got to do you like that.
So let's get back to this. I think that today we've gotten the chance to look at stable diffusion, understand it in a way that's not intimidating. We're not sitting here in front of a command line. We don't have a ton of configuration work to do. We've done something that was really quick. Took the technical details, kind of pushed them aside to allow us to have a little bit of fun. And when we have fun with technology, we find better ways to implement it and better ways to make it help us in our daily lives, whether it's personal or work related. And that's what I took away from the past hour. I hope our audience took away too, because now that we've done this, I've got so many more ideas for things that we're going to be working on over the coming months.
Oh, you got to get in there. I don't know. I basically did a version of this tutorial very, very fast and dry. And I don't know how many people watched it, because I haven't seen any images generated in the Discord from you guys. So I want to see people using this. Hopefully, as you can see on the screen, all you have to do is go Google Colab Automatic 1111, and you can be doing this within minutes. You don't have to have a fast computer. You don't even have to have a computer at all. You can use your phone. Please try it out. I know that when I finally took the leap, ripped off the Band-Aid, tried it out, I was like, wow. Every time I looked at all this command line stuff, it seemed way beyond my skills. I'm not a developer. I'm not like most of the MSPs. I don't get in there and program stuff and work with networks. So I was intimidated. But once I tried it, I was like, okay, what have I been waiting for? What have I been scared of? Nothing. This is a blast. This is what I do for fun now.
I said the same thing about my taxes, you know, avoided them for many years, finally jumped into them. It's amazing.
Yeah,
no, I'm just kidding. I'm just
don't tell
kidding.
The IRS that.
Yeah. Seriously, hashtag LOL. But this was fantastic. I have so many ideas for us. I think that we're also going to hold a contest in our Discord. That's what we're going to do. We're going to figure it out. This is all happening live. These thoughts, just like the AI was being generated. Some of them may be great. Some of them may not be. But yes, we're going to do a contest because I can already see there's some chatter going on and I want it to continue and I want the creativity to continue because there's nothing better, especially in a community like our MMN Discord, which, in case you didn't notice, there was a QR up here. Oh, there it is again. I love prompt, boom, QR comes up. So yes, please do join us. Is there anything you'd like to say before we go, Phil?
Oh, I just want to say thanks to Ray for inviting us to come do this, to have a little talk on stable diffusion. I think Ray recognized how much passion I have for this stuff and gave me a little platform today on Technical Deficit to talk about it. So I really appreciate it. And I just want to say thanks to the audience for tuning in. It's been another great episode of Technical Deficit.
Yeah. And if you're interested in learning more, definitely check out our YouTube channel. It was at youtube.com/MSP Media Network for plenty more episodes of not just what Phil's been putting together with AI Roundup, but all of our other shows, MSP Dispatch, 38 at 38, which we had a great episode of, and more. But until then, I believe it's time for us to get going. So let's do our official sign off, which is just going to be a wave.
We got them.
See you soon, folks.
This has been a broadcast of the MSP Media Network.